From Globe Life Park in Arlington, Texas, this is Dugout Dirt, a Texas Rangers podcast. It's a baseball podcast about everything that happens outside the chalk lines.
There's so many things about baseball I like. I don't have enough time to tell you all the things I like.
You know, the best compliments I ever get are when I receive a message or a letter from a blind person who says, I feel like I can see the game.
You know, my number one responsibility, the way I look at it, is hire the best people, provide them with all the resources that they need to do their jobs, and let them do their job.
Going to the World Series twice, the first one we beat the Yankees in front of our home crowd, to send Texas to the World Series for the first time is something I'll never forget.
Previously on Dugout Dirt.
That's when the doctors came back with it, you know, talking about the cancer cysts that were on the bone, that they were able to cut those out, find the origin, and I spent another, month and a half in the hospital again, recovering from that surgery and recovering from that illness.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Jared Couch, and if this is your first time listening to Dugout Dirt, I encourage you to go back and listen to episode one, because this is a two-part series on our new manager, Jeff Banister. Now, to fully appreciate Jeff Banister and where he came from, you have to go back to his roots. So go listen to part one and then come join us in part two. Just a little reminder, our goal with Dugout Dirt is to bring you closer to the Texas Rangers baseball organization. We want to tell the stories outside the chalk lines, the people that impact the organization as a whole. So if it's grounds crew, baseball operations, marketing, human resources, anybody that impacts the Texas Rangers organization, we want to tell their story. As I mentioned, this is the second part in a two-part series on our manager, Jeff Banister. Now, when we left you last, Jeff Banister had just beaten cancer. After graduating from high school, Jeff went on to play baseball in Baytown, Texas at Lee College. Jeff had played so well at Lee College that he was on the radar of Major League scouts. Now, Jeff's driving force in life had always been to make it to the major leagues. He had all these surgeries that eventually found the cancer in his ankle that the doctor said he didn't know what type of athlete Jeff would be going forward. But Jeff was defiant. He said he would make it to the major leagues. So this was his moment. And then a collision at home plate nearly stole his moment and changed his life forever.
All right. October 23rd. That's what you want.
Yeah.
That's the day you want. October 23rd. 10-23. You know what's crazy about the number? Number 23 is crazy. Baseball guys are nuts. Numbers are nuts. I used to be petrified, the number 17 and the number 23. 17, because I was wearing 17 when I broke my neck. 23, because it was October 23rd. Crazy. Until they read the 23rd Psalm, the day that we buried my dad. Anyways, October 23rd, day I broke my neck. Originally wasn't supposed to play in the game. Deacon Jones, scout for the Yankees at the time, had asked my coach if I could play one more game as the last tournament of the fall semester. Still had the winter draft at the time. He wanted to send in another report, probably, you know, report on whether or not I would be drafted in that winter draft or not. So my coach at the time agreed to play me. He said he'd play me for five innings. Just so happened it was the fifth inning. There was runner at third base. Shallow fly ball hit the right field. Right fielder caught the ball. It was flat-footed. Shallow enough where he was able to move in, catch it. I don't believe either one of us thought at the time that the runner was going to actually try to score, but he tagged up, tried to score. Throw was made. It went up the line a ways, where I actually went up the line to try to block the ball. And my intention was I went to my knees and blocked the ball, catch a ball, and try to make a tag on the way by. And well, the runner at the time decided that he was going to go directly down the line. And my old football mentality at the time kind of crept back in. I was on my knees and I saw the runner coming right at me. So I felt like I would deliver a blow to him. And as I lunged myself into him, he tried to jump over the top of me and we collided. His knee collided with the top of my head with full force as I'm trying to drive myself into him to protect me. His knee jammed my head straight down, compressing and fracturing three vertebrae in my neck, and which left me on the field of play with split open head, which, you know, my coach at the time, the first coach who got to me, a man by the name of John Lee, had got to me and cradled me in his arms and body just to hold me still. I think they were more concerned at the time at the cut on the top of my head until I was a little more coherent to where I could actually speak with them. And I guess during that time, my father walked out on the field and looked straight down at me and asked me the question, could I feel anything? Could I move anything? And I was, at that time, I was able to tell him no, that I, you know, I couldn't move anything. And the only thing that I felt was, you know, essentially a type of electrical impulses racing through my body, just as though you hit your funny bone.
Jeff Bannister walked on the field that day in front of a major league scout looking to achieve his dream. He left that field, strapped to a stretcher, and in an ambulance, wondering not if he impressed the scout, but if he would ever walk again. Once they got to the hospital, Jeff lay there, still in his baseball uniform.
I just remember my mother, at one point during the that first few hours of being in the hospital, you know, nurses coming in and out, I still had my baseball uniform on, and at the time I wanted it off, and they gave her a pair of scissors to cut my uniform off of me.
The next morning, the doctor gave Jeff and his parents the news. He had three fractured vertebrae, and later that evening, they shaved Jeff's head, put him in traction, and took him into surgery.
I believe it was that evening, or maybe the next day, performed surgery on me and cleaned out the backside of my neck that they did the second surgery with, went in the front and cleaned out the fractured pieces and actually wired up my neck, and also had carved out bone out of both sides of my hip where they were able to stabilize the vertebrae and close me back up. But as with that, after the first surgery, I started getting some manipulation back into arms and everything but my right leg. And then after the second surgery is when I was able to start feeling and part of my right leg and started getting manipulation back into the right leg. But was not able to leave the bed for another 4 months.
On the day he was released from the hospital, Jeff's grandfather was rolling him to the car in a wheelchair, and Jeff had one question for the doctor. When would he be able to play baseball again?
When they rolled me to the car and they would put me in the car, and I asked him when I could start playing baseball again, and Dr. Lockhart told me, he said, Jeff, you'll never play baseball again. He said, you need to find some type of occupation that allows you to live life the way you feel you need to live life. And because you get hit like this again, he said, they're not gonna repair you. He said, they'll just bring a bag out, put you in the bag, zip it up, and we'll put you in the ground. And, you know, I've thought about that moment pretty much every day of my life. The challenge of someone telling you that, you know, when you reach your own mortality and you get to face it and move forward because you understand where the end is. And for me, I love the fact that he told me I couldn't. I love the fact that he told me I shouldn't, because that's been the motivating force for me every day since. I lost fear of where the end would be for me, just for the fact that my main goal was to play Major League Baseball. For me, it was, there was no other choice other than to push forward. Yeah, I smiled at him. I told him, Doc, I will play in the big leagues.
After recovering from paralysis, Jeff will continue to pursue his dream of playing Major League Baseball. And in 1986, in the 25th round, the Pittsburgh Pirates selected Jeff Banister, a catcher from the University of Houston.
So you did push forward. Tell me about your Major League Baseball career.
Well, my Major League Baseball career as a player was very short. I think it lasted 5 days total, maybe 4 days total. I think there was an off day in there. July 23rd, 1991. Kind of the ironic thing of that whole story is that spring training of 1991, my wife Karen and I were in the middle of trying to purchase a house. Her being a school teacher and me being a minor league player, neither one of us had very much money, and we'd made the decision that she wasn't going to come to spring training that year and really have minimal trips to see me, just the kind of the art of saving money. And as I was looking at the Major League schedule, and I looked down July 23rd, and I'm telling her, I said, look, Karen, I said, if I make it to the big leagues by July 23rd, and I remember circling the date with a pen, I said, if I make it to the big leagues by July 23rd, you know where we get to come to after that homestand? She said, no, where? I said, Houston. So I'll get to come home. I said, at least we'll get to see each other during that road trip to Houston. And I didn't think anything else about it. I put that schedule in my wallet and finished spring training. We started the season, and the season was going along, and I was having an okay year, not a great year, but good enough, playing for Buffalo. The night of July 22nd, my roommate and I, Jeff Richardson, had gone back to our apartment, turned on SportsCenter. We were getting ready to start packing for a road trip, because the road trip that we were on was to Oklahoma City. Well, Karen and my mother and pretty much my entire family had traveled to Oklahoma City because we were getting ready to go to Oklahoma City the next day. It was going to be the first time that I was going to get to see my wife that year. So I was waiting for her phone call and packing. And we'd watch the SportsCenter, and we'd watch the highlights of the Pirate game. And so phone rings. And Jeff Richardson answers the phone, and he says, yeah, hold on just a second, Skip, I'll get him. And Whitey tells me, he says, hey, it's Terry Collins is on the phone, you're going to the big leagues. And well, he and I used to have this running joke all the time when we were back in the apartment. When the phone would ring, we'd always tell each other, hey, that's a phone call, that's the one. One of us is going to the big leagues, you're going to the big leagues tomorrow. Well, I'm like, yeah, okay, Whitey, whatever. We just watched the highlights. Nobody got hurt. So he says, no, really, it's Terry Collins. He's on the phone. So I get on the phone, and TC asked me, he says, hey Banny, how long have you been waiting for this phone call? And I told him, I said, well, if you're my wife, about 30 minutes. He said, no, really, how long have you been waiting for this phone call? And I said, Terry, I said, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, look, he said, Don Slott got hurt. You're going to the big leagues tomorrow. And I laughed, and I said, all right, Terry, I mean, come on now. Who is this, really? He said, no, seriously. Don Slott got hurt. You're going to the big leagues tomorrow. And I just remember the last thing that I telling him that if this was a joke, it was a really bad joke, and I'd find a way to get back whoever was on the other side of this phone in the morning.
It wasn't a joke. Jeff Banister had made it to the show. The man that beat cancer and beat paralysis was now a Major League Baseball player. The next morning, he boarded a flight to Pittsburgh and walked into the locker room and saw a jersey with the name Banister on the back.
I saw a jersey hanging in the locker room with the name Banister on the back of it, and it became real. Went up to the front office, signed a contract, had my name on it, had a Major League salary on it, and begin to think about, you know, all the people in my life that had poured into me and made this moment real.
And so on July 23rd, 1991, Jeff Banister would make his major league debut. The Pirates were playing the Atlanta Braves, and in the bottom of the seventh, up 10-3, Jeff Banister would receive a call he has been waiting on his whole life.
I was down a bullpen. The bullpen phone rang. They told me that I was pinch hitting for Doug Drabek, which was kind of cool for me, being a University of Houston alumni also, that I was going to get the pinch hit for Doug. I just remember running back down from the bullpen to the dugout, trying to find a bat, a helmet. Neither one of them were there. I think Bob Walk decided to hide all of my equipment. So I had to scramble to find a helmet. I had to find a bat. I picked up a bat that felt good in my hands. It just happened to be Cecil Espy's bat. I don't know whose helmet I put on. I was able to get out onto the on-deck circle about the time that the first hitter was making an out. So took a couple swings. I walked up to the on-deck circle, and I think my knees were shaking.
Now Banister will come out and make his major league debut. He will pinch hit for Drabek. This kid was hitting 266 at Buffalo. Jeff Banister.
And I'd always told myself that I got an opportunity to take a swing in a major league game. The very first swing I'd take, I was going to swing as though I was trying to hit one out of the stadium.
Banister doesn't get it, and the count evens at 1-1.
Next pitch was, a high hard one up right around my chin. The next one was a slider. The next pitch was a breaking ball that I put a pretty good swing on that I barreled that was a ground ball in between short and third.
Swung, ground ball, headed for left field. Blauser, great play, long throw. He is safe.
Well, not very many people get a base hit in their first at bat. Good play by Blauser. It's a lot on this throw. Bell, good job to come up with it, but it's an infield single for the youngster.
I fought like hell all the way down the baseline to get to first base and was able to leg out an infield single. Seemed like forever. I think I counted every step down the way until I got to first base and hit the bag and looked up and I saw a safe call and it was just a flood of emotions, relief. Excitement, elation. I knew that I carried a trailer of people with me that 90 feet.
And that was it. One at bat, one hit. Jeff Banister's career batting average, frozen in time at 1,000. He would spend 29 years with the Pittsburgh Pirates as a player, coach, and instructor until Texas came calling with a chance to return home.
Can you walk me through, was it a phone call? Or how was the news delivered when you were named, or when they told you were the new manager of the Rangers?
Well, I was given a phone call at about 11:45 at night by John Daniels. And I could tell that he was pacing around his room, his house. We'd talked about some decisions that needed to be made. We talked about the possibility of coming to Arlington and meeting with ownership. Within about 15 minutes into the conversation changed from, conversation with the ownership, meeting with ownership to, I would like to make you the 18th manager of the Texas Rangers. And by that time, it was about midnight. My wife and I were sitting at the kitchen table together and I could tell as the conversation was going that Mr. Daniels was getting ready to offer me the job, and I could feel that rush of excitement come over me. And when he offered the opportunity to be the 18th manager of the Texas Rangers, that just echoed in my head, and I thought, wow, what a moment in my lifetime, and not only my lifetime but my family's lifetime.
And that's it for this week's episode of Dugout Dirt, a Texas Rangers podcast. I'd like to thank everybody at the Texas Rangers who helped make this podcast happen, my co-producer and editor, Byron Hardy, and especially Jeff Banister for sharing his amazing story. And I'd like to thank you, the listener, for listening. If you want more original Texas Rangers content, please visit texasrangers.com/neverevercquit. Also, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We are very active on all the social media sites. And on the next episode of Dugout Dirt, we'll be visiting with the Texas Rangers marketing team and discuss how we come up with campaign slogans. A little hint, visit Jeff Bannister's Twitter page. Until next time, this has been Dugout Dirt, a Texas Rangers podcast. It's a baseball podcast about everything that happens outside the chalk lines.